Egzamin maturalny z języka angielskiego. Poziom rozszerzony. Usłyszysz dwukrotnie teksty do zadań od pierwszego do trzeciego. Przed wysłuchaniem każdego tekstu usłyszysz dźwięk. W nagraniu przewidziane są przerwy na zapoznanie się z poleceniami oraz treścią zadań sygnalizowane dźwiękiem. Rozwiązuj poszczególne zadania w trakcie słuchania nagrań oraz w czasie przerw po ich wysłuchaniu. Zadanie pierwsze. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
One. The exchange program for young researchers works to promote academic cooperation between universities, to contribute to the advancement of research and to attract talented scientists to participate in it. This program has been running for the past 2 years, so now it's time we evaluated its results. I would appreciate your active participation, and I hope there will be diverse viewpoints expressed. We're honored to welcome our special guest, the president of Princeton University. I've also invited a few students who participated in the program and will share their experiences. So please join us after the coffee break.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
1. The exchange program for young researchers works to promote academic cooperation between universities, to contribute to the advancement of research and to attract talented scientists to participate in it. This program has been running for the past 2 years, so now it's time we evaluated its results. I would appreciate your active participation, and I hope there will be diverse viewpoints expressed. We're honored to welcome our special guest, the president of Princeton University. I've also invited a few students who participated in the program and will share their experiences. So please join us after the coffee break. Two.
A businessman walks into a bank and asks for a loan. He says he's going to Europe for 2 weeks and needs to borrow $7,000. The bank clerk says the bank will need some kind of security for such a loan. So the businessman hands over the keys to a Rolls-Royce and an employee drives the Rolls into the bank's garage as a guarantee for the loan. 2 weeks later, the businessman repays the $7,000 and interest, which comes to $19.67. The bank clerk says, "We are very happy to have handled it for you. However, just out of curiosity, I'd like to ask you a question. You're a millionaire. Why would you bother to borrow $7,000? The businessman replies, "Where else in San Francisco can I park my car for 2 weeks for $20?
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
2.
A businessman walks into a bank and asks for a loan. He says he's going to Europe for 2 weeks and needs to borrow $7,000. The bank clerk says the bank will need some kind of security for such a loan. So the businessman hands over the keys to a Rolls-Royce and an employee drives the Rolls into the bank's garage as a guarantee for the loan. 2 weeks later, the businessman repays the $7,000 and interest, which comes to $19.67. The bank clerk says, "We are very happy to have handled it for you. However, just out of curiosity, I'd like to ask you a question. You're a millionaire. Why would you bother to borrow $7,000? The businessman replies, "Where else in San Francisco can I park my car for 2 weeks for $20?
Three. We've listened to many advocates of space exploration programs today, but most of them seem to ignore the fact that the money spent on sending probes to distant planets could be better invested. Millions of people are struggling simply to live from day to day, so our dream of exploring space is a luxury we cannot afford. I'm not convinced by the explanation of the previous speakers that the economic, scientific, and technological returns of space exploration have far exceeded the investment. The results don't promise much. In my opinion, such projects are a waste of our time and effort. We would be better off choosing other targets, such as a world free from disease or hunger. Thank you for your attention.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
3. We've listened to many advocates of space exploration programs today, but most of them seem to ignore the fact that the money spent on sending probes to distant planets could be better invested. Millions of people are struggling simply to live from day to day, so our dream of exploring space is a luxury we cannot afford. I'm not convinced by the explanation of the previous speakers that the economic, scientific, and technological returns of space exploration have far exceeded the investment. The results don't promise much. In my opinion, such projects are a waste of our time and effort. We would be better off choosing other targets, such as a world free from disease or hunger. Thank you for your attention.
Zadanie drugie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Speaker 1.
I ordered a TV from an online company that advertises $500 as a bonus if you happen to come across the same item for less somewhere else. All you have to do is fill out their price check form and they'll get back to you in 1 to 4 days. I sent several emails, but they still haven't addressed the fact that I found the TV in another department store at a lower price. That was about a fortnight ago, and nothing happened. Fortunately, I recorded my conversation with their representative, who confirmed it was the same TV, and saved it as evidence. I won't give up, and you can be sure I'll never purchase anything from them again.
Speaker 2. I bought a $200 piece of equipment. A scanner, printer, and copier all in one. When I brought it home, the printer wouldn't recognize the ink cartridges and kept saying, "Error, no ink." I called the company's customer helpline. It was a horrible experience. I was on the phone for probably 45 minutes. All the solutions the company's employee was recommending were either out of the manual, which I was also holding in my hands, or they were other standard methods that didn't apply to my problem at all. It was ridiculous. Speaker 3.
The last time I made a purchase via the internet, the monitor was dead on arrival. I called the company's customer support number and got through to their employee, who directed me to the monitor manual on the CD provided with the computer. I wondered if he understood the irony of putting the monitor troubleshooting guide on a CD. It seemed obvious that since the monitor didn't work, you'd have no way of reading the guide. After 20 minutes of being on hold while he talked to a supervisor, he said that as I didn't want to get a refund, they'd have to deliver a new monitor. It was the very suggestion I'd made at the beginning of the call. I wish they'd been more attentive to my needs.
Speaker 4. I paid $20 extra to have a package delivered by Christmas. It was dispatched on the 22nd of December and arrived on the 27th. I spoke with three customer service representatives. One of them actually said they weren't responsible for acts of God. Generally, they said that the unexpected spell of bad weather was not their fault, so I couldn't get any money back. But if they had told me when I was about to pay the extra charge that delivery before Christmas depended on the weather, I wouldn't have ordered from them. The rep pointed out that everything was listed in the terms they posted on the internet, and it was my responsibility to familiarize myself with them.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Speaker 1.
I ordered a TV from an online company that advertises $500 as a bonus if you happen to come across the same item for less somewhere else. All you have to do is fill out their price check form and they'll get back to you in 1 to 4 days. I sent several emails, but they still haven't addressed the fact that I found the TV in another department store at a lower price. That was about a fortnight ago, and nothing happened. Fortunately, I recorded my conversation with their representative, who confirmed it was the same TV, and saved it as evidence. I won't give up, and you can be sure I'll never purchase anything from them again.
Speaker 2. I bought a $200 piece of equipment, a scanner, printer, and copier all in one. When I brought it home, the printer wouldn't recognize the ink cartridges and kept saying, "Error, no ink." I called the company's customer helpline. It was a horrible experience. I was on the phone for probably 45 minutes. All the solutions the company's employee was recommending were either out of the manual, which I was also holding in my hands, or they were other standard methods that didn't apply to my problem at all. It was ridiculous. Speaker 3.
The last time I made a purchase via the internet, the monitor was dead on arrival. I called the company's customer support number and got through to their employee, who directed me to the monitor manual on the CD provided with the computer. I wondered if he understood the irony of putting the monitor troubleshooting guide on a CD. It seemed obvious that since the monitor didn't work, you'd have no way of reading the guide. After 20 minutes of being on hold while he talked to a supervisor, he said that as I didn't want to get a refund, they'd have to deliver a new monitor. It was the very suggestion I'd made at the beginning of the call. I wish they'd been more attentive to my needs.
Speaker 4. I paid $20 extra to have a package delivered by Christmas. It was dispatched on the 22nd of December and arrived on the 27th. I spoke with three customer service representatives. One of them actually said they weren't responsible for acts of God. Generally, they said that the unexpected spell of bad weather was not their fault, so I couldn't get any money back. But if they had told me when I was about to pay the extra charge that delivery before Christmas depended on the weather, I wouldn't have ordered from them. The rep pointed out that everything was listed in the terms they posted on the internet, and it was my responsibility to familiarize myself with them.
Zadanie trzecie. Przeczytaj polecenie i zapoznaj się z treścią zadania.
Today, the TV producer, Jeffrey Drummond, tells us what it was like to work with Julia Child, the woman who taught Americans to cook. Jeffrey, how did you two meet?
In the late 1980s, I produced a TV series called New York's Master Chefs. The idea was to let people take a look in the kitchens of restaurants, where everybody had begun to flock at the time. We needed a host for another series we were going to make, and somebody recommended Julia. I wasn't convinced, so I decided to talk to her. I got invited to the culinary course she was conducting, and one day I popped in for an hour. I was mesmerized because all her charisma I saw on TV came across 10 times more when I saw her live. I knew she was the person I was looking for.
So you talked to Julia and persuaded her to do the series Cooking with Master Chefs with you?
Well, first I told her about my idea for the show. I thought I would travel around the country to see all these chefs, and then Julia would go through the material and make an introduction and some segments. But she made it quite clear that she was going to be a big part of the project, that she would travel and do everything. It surprised me that despite her age, she was in her late 80s then, she insisted on being a full participant. Anything that involved her, she wanted to have a say in it. We immediately started planning the series and the menus.
Do you remember any of her programs in particular?
She made some of them with a famous chef, Jacques Pepin. One time they were making mushrooms stuffed with spinach. She tasted them and said, "Jacques, this spinach tastes a little tough." "Well, it doesn't taste tough to me," he replied. And she just said, "I guess you must have sharper teeth." I also remember when we were at Martha Stewart's house and they were making a cake. Martha's was geometric perfection, and Julia made one which looked like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. I was surprised, but it wasn't an accidental flaw. After the program, Julia told me that she'd wanted to show Martha and the audience that food doesn't have to look perfect and can still be delicious.
And how did Julia prepare for the program?
Before shooting, we would plan the framework of each episode. That is, the stages of making each dish and the time breaks. We organized a kitchen in the basement where some food was prepared, and Julia would go downstairs during the breaks in filming and check everything. And yet, preparing a detailed script was out of the question because she delighted in the unexpected. She loved telling jokes or stories spontaneously, so you'd never know what she was going to do or say next. That was the fun of it for her.
And the last question. How would you describe Julia's legacy?
I think she brought respectability to homemade meals in America. For many people, it was almost as if Julia had given them permission to pursue their dreams and ambitions in the food industry. One of Julia's biggest achievements was the change in the status of a chef from a manual worker to a skilled professional.
Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us.
Wysłuchaj nagrania jeszcze raz.
Today, the TV producer, Jeffrey Drummond, tells us what it was like to work with Julia Child, the woman who taught Americans to cook. Jeffrey, how did you two meet?
In the late 1980s, I produced a TV series called New York's Master Chefs. The idea was to let people take a look in the kitchens of restaurants, where everybody had begun to flock at the time. We needed a host for another series we were going to make, and somebody recommended Julia. I wasn't convinced, so I decided to talk to her. I got invited to the culinary course she was conducting, and one day I popped in for an hour. I was mesmerized because all her charisma I saw on TV came across 10 times more when I saw her live. I knew she was the person I was looking for.
So you talked to Julia and persuaded her to do the series Cooking with Master Chefs with you?
Well, first I told her about my idea for the show. I thought I would travel around the country to see all these chefs, and then Julia would go through the material and make an introduction and some segments. But she made it quite clear that she was going to be a big part of the project, that she would travel and do everything. It surprised me that despite her age, she was in her late 80s then, she insisted on being a full participant. Anything that involved her, she wanted to have a say in it. We immediately started planning the series and the menus.
Do you remember any of her programs in particular?
She made some of them with a famous chef, Jacques Pepin. One time they were making mushrooms stuffed with spinach. She tasted them and said, "Jacques, this spinach tastes a little tough." "Well, it doesn't taste tough to me," he replied, and she just said, "I guess you must have sharper teeth." I also remember when we were at Martha Stewart's house and they were making a cake. Martha's was geometric perfection, and Julia made one which looked like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. I was surprised, but it wasn't an accidental flaw. After the program, Julia told me that she'd wanted to show Martha and the audience that food doesn't have to look perfect and can still be delicious.
And how did Julia prepare for the program?
Before shooting, we would plan the framework of each episode. That is, the stages of making each dish and the time breaks. We organized a kitchen in the basement where some food was prepared, and Julia would go downstairs during the breaks in filming and check everything. And yet, preparing a detailed script was out of the question because she delighted in the unexpected. She loved telling jokes or stories spontaneously, so you'd never know what she was going to do or say next. That was the fun of it for her.
And the last question. How would you describe Julia's legacy?
I think she brought respectability to homemade meals in America. For many people, it was almost as if Julia had given them permission to pursue their dreams and ambitions in the food industry. One of Julia's biggest achievements was the change in the status of a chef from a manual worker to a skilled professional.
Jeffrey, thanks so much for joining us.
czas przeznaczony na tę część egzaminu minął.